Good evening, James McKenna here with My Science Hour, March 11th, 2021, and a couple announcements. Tonight is the last night of this season on this frequency, 5.935, if you're listening on shortwave to WWCR Tower Number 2. That will change. Now, this doesn't affect this share. This show re-airs a couple times another shortwave, but relative to the WWCR Tower 2, next week it will be on frequency 6.115 megahertz. So make a note of that. Next week, 6.115 megahertz. And the reason for that is that during the summertime, as we cross from winter into spring, which we're doing, and then into summer, as we're doing right now, certain shortwave frequencies work better in the daytime and some work better at nighttime. So to accommodate for that, since I'm right there, 6 o'clock on Thursday evening, during the summertime, I work better, my show works better on a higher frequency. And sometimes it goes to, but this year it's going to 6.115. And then next fall, when daylight savings time or the change of season comes again, it'll go back to 5.935. Okay. After last week's special show, as I talked about the Israelites, wow, did I get some responses. And mainly people adding information, just tons of information, including, for example, people who drink milk. Most people cannot drink milk. And so the people who drink milk had a edge up on existence because milk came from all kinds of different animals, goats and cows and, all different kinds of animals you could get milk from. So it was a additional sustenance. And so anyway, once again, related to the Israelites, the white-skinned, fair-haired, blue-eyed, typically blue-eyed races that came out of ultimately going back to Abraham. And I talked about this on John Moore's show a week ago, and then this yesterday we also brought up this topic. Got a lot of people calling in with additional comments, so it's really interesting. Some people are very tuned to this. Other people just like, huh? Oh, I didn't know I was an Israelite. You know, they're just clueless, and that's because it's been completely whitewashed out of any kind of education or materials that would tell you who you are. So people have no idea of their heritage. The efforts to extinguish the history of the Israelites has been working. I've got to say but this is not the first time this type of thing has happened where they basically sequester information, move it out, move some other information in, and then basically destroy a culture, a civilization, or a race in this case, because the Israelites are a race. They're the dominant race in the United States. And so when the big movement came, if you look at a population chart of the United States, through the 1800s, you know, the population somewhat grew. There was not that much influx. But the shipping was not what it was as you crossed into the late 1800s when the big steamships came into play. Now you can put thousands and thousands of people on a boat and ship them across the ocean. And so, you know, the Titanic or the ships that rivaled the Titanic in size, you know, with many, many thousands of people and coming across, it would take them a week to get across, a week to go back. So every 2 weeks, you have another maybe 3,000-4,000 people, and then lots of these boats. So you're talking about 10,000-20,000 people every other week coming into the U.S., into the big ports like New York, etc., and even in the western ports. So that's where the population of the United States started to zoom upwards. And to the point where, my point is that a lot of those people coming in from the eastern side there were Israelites. They were leaving their homelands in Scandinavia. They were coming in the Great Lakes. it's very interesting that some of the big posts where the immigrants came in were in the northern states on ports that no longer exist. There might be an old dock there that goes out a couple hundred feet into the lake because it was shallow for the big steamboats to dock. And these people just came in by the tons. They brought their families. They brought a certain amount of cookware and axes and saws, etc. They populated northern Wisconsin, northern Minnesota, coming in via the Great Lakes, Ontario, southern Ontario, etc., and then into, you know, like Toronto and those places along the Canadian side and all along the United States side, populating. That's where these cities came from. The steel mills, the, you know, they brought their technology with them. Metallurgy, you know, in farming, forestry. And these people just moved in. And then around, probably 1920s, these people that came in on the Great Lakes moved south to the big cities, Milwaukee, Madison, Minneapolis, St. Paul. Those cities were built overnight. Just tremendous amount of growth by these people moving from the north, literally from along the Great Lake, these little port cities, and just moved south. And, you know, they cut down the big first growth logging of the northern forests. And all of that wood, all of that lumber came south into Minneapolis, St. Paul, Milwaukee, you know, Detroit, and into these areas where they built the houses that are still standing today. And if you look at these houses, you go up in the attic and you look at the boards up in the roof, they're boards, pine boards, and they're still there today. A lot of it heartwood, a Douglas fir, etc., that came in from the Northwest. By then, the big railroads were in place. So this is what built America, was the Christian Israelite descendants of these northern European countries, Ireland, England, Scotland, Norway, Sweden, Finland, Denmark, Germany, northern Germany, because these people, they left in boats. Those were the ports of calls. And then, of course, then you had the people from Italy coming in, the Mediterranean countries, also coming by boats through the Straits of Gibraltar, going west to the United States, boats and boats and boats filled with people who got the United States to pursue the American dream. And lo and behold, it wasn't far behind them were the bankers to get us into World War I and World War II, and then the Korean War, then the Vietnam War, then the, you know, and on and on and on, all the other wars that were banker wars. But using the Israelite as cannon fodder and leave it up to the good old Catholic Church, run by the Jesuits at this point, whose bank it was who controlled the Bank of the United States. And, you know, so you have to understand that at this point, and back from the Middle Ages, the Vatican Bank was controlled by the Jesuits in the Vatican. They had taken over the Vatican, and really they're not, you know, I hate to say it, but they're not Catholics. The Catholic Church was usurped. And so the Catholics maintained the Christian religion, but there were a lot of schisms. There were lots of groups that broke away, the Protestants and the Evangelicals, and the, you know, just the whole long, long list of groups that broke away. Originally, the Protestants, Martin Luther, the Lutherans, etc. And but all of them being Christian. You know, you could talk about all the differences, etc. But basically, they were all Christian religions. And that's what built the United States. That is what built the United States. And then the welfare cultures came in place, and the black people, unfortunately, were targeted to where they had, you know, welfare for more kids the mom has, you know, the more money they get. But you can't have a dad in the house. If you have a dad in the house, you don't get any money. These were democratic programs. They stylized welfare, generational welfare, which is the black population is trying to get out of now, a lot of them succeeding, becoming very prosperous in every field from, well, every field, of course. And then, but anyway, the point of this is that the United States was founded on Israelite principles, the Declaration of Independence, the entire concept of a free man, that the government does not have the right to tax persons, and that's what they were trying to get away from England. And, of course, all of that is back now and 10 times worse. The groups that have come into England or the United States are the same, to take control, to basically bury the Israelite culture. And that's something you have to understand, that if you're from those countries, here's the most important point, is those countries were totally, totally separated from what we now call Europe, Southern Europe, Italy, France, and Southern Germany, and et cetera. Those countries were totally separated from the North, and there were physical barriers there. You had the Pyrenees Mountains in Spain. You had the Caucasian Mountains in Russia, which blocked this migration to the east, so it flowed west. But you had the Black Forest, which was not only the Black Forest, but just a tremendous forested barrier between the Roman Empire and the evolution of the Roman Empire to the north. They just couldn't move up there. So that area north of the Black Forest and northern Spain and the British Islands and the Ireland and Scotland and the Norwegian countries, Norway, Denmark, Sweden, Finland, all remained very distinct, although the Russians were constantly trying to raid, etc. But the point is that throughout history, back through the time when the Israelites were first moving, after Moses left Israel with the 12 tribes of Israel, etc., the movement that was probably around 1500 BC. That was the Venus event. That was when Venus the comet was coming by. Okay, so anyway, a lot of interesting comments coming out of the listenership last week. And probably the biggest one is people being surprised that they are Israelites. They didn't understand what an Israelite is. That, you know, the blonde-haired, blue-eyed, and like Christ was an Israelite. He was of the house of David. That's what they were doing when he was born. Mary was of the house of David, you know, Hebrews, Israelites, and they had to go to Bethlehem. That was the town of David, where they had to return to their original house or town. And so when she went there, she was pregnant. And this is an interesting thing also. I've been trying to figure out some things. The age of some of these people. I talked about Joseph of Arimathea last week. And remember that people back then started having babies younger. But I estimate that Mary was probably between 15 and 18 years old when she had Jesus. Her uncle, Joseph of Arimathea, was probably about when Christ was starting his ministry, 30 years old. Joseph of Arimathea was probably around 58 years old. And that's just an estimate. And by that time, Joseph of Arimathea was all over. He was down in the Holy Land. He did work with Christ down in what is now Israel, and at that time was Israel also. The Israelite nation lived there. And he was there when Jesus was crucified. He was there to ask for the body of Christ, but he also was working out of Rome. He was up in England. There's indications that he went a lot farther east, which is very, very probable, being the businessman that he was, going on the trade routes east and then also potentially west. So at any rate, a lot of interesting comments coming in last week. Okay, I'm going to run through a number of other topics here, but the whole issue of the Israelites, etc., I'm going to touch on this topic going forward. But they have lost their vision. They've lost their who they are. And make no mistake that this is all about power and control. I just have one other comment here, that why did they kill Christ? What was his crime against society? And of course, they always find something. It's like the Trump presidency. They kept coming up with accusations and, you know, false accusations, but then trying him. They always got to try somebody. They got to have public conviction. They got to bring him in front of the court. And it's not just about finding somebody guilty. It's about rubbing their face in the dirt. It's about taking you down and just treating you, you know, and your family and everybody else like, you know, rub your face in the dirt as much as they can. And so anyway, why did they kill Christ? You know, and this was not just like taking him out and hanging him from a tree. This was a public spectacle. They wanted to embarrass him in front of all of the people that a week earlier were cheering him on. But this was about power, make no mistake. He was out in the countryside giving his lectures, and then he had the miracle of the loaves and fishes, and then he said, look, the birds of the heaven, don't worry about how they're going to eat tomorrow. Why are you so worried about it? Don't you think God loves you more than he does the birds? And then the Sermon on the Mount, and then the prophecy of the end day prophecies, where he talked about basically the comets coming by again. The stars will seem to fall from the heaven, the moon will turn to blood, the signs in the heavens, etc. Here's the issue, though. The people were listening to him and not to the government and not to the other hierarchy of the established religions, including the Jews, the synagogue. He threw the money changers out of the synagogue. They did not like this guy. He was cutting in onto their business. They had the people in order, the people giving their tithes, the people were contributing, doing the money changing at the table when they went to the temple. And this guy comes along, this Jesus guy comes along and wreaks havoc with everything they're doing. And the people are walking away in groves. Every day, more people walk off their jobs and go listen to this guy. And they're like, it was a power thing. They cannot stand you giving homage to somebody else besides them. They're power nuts. They're nutcases. And it's the same thing today. So if you look at what they did to Trump, who was an Israelite, that's why they hated Trump. It's not because of his Chinese policy or because he got us out of the Paris Climate Accord or whatever. No, he's an Israelite. And he was taking power and giving it back to the Israelite nation. That drove them crazy. It drove people crazy. And you say, well, what about Nancy Pelosi? She's a Catholic. Well, no. She's of the Catholic sect that the mafia came out. There's a lot of, let me say this. There are many, many groups using the Catholic Church as a front agency for their nefarious activities. The Jesuits, the Jesuit banking community, the Rothschild Bank, the Sicilian mob, the mafia, and they were not Catholics. They adopted Catholicism as a front, keeping all of their old, basically dirty ways. And so when people like Nancy Pelosi, she's related to Gavin Newsom from California and that little pencil neck, what's his name? These people are all related. If you look at the hierarchy of California, if you look at the hierarchy of New York, these people are all related. And they're not, a lot of them use religion as a front, like, look at how holier than now they are. No, no, no. These people use that as a front, as a facade. But they hate the Israelites. They hate the Israelites. Cecil Rhodes, the guy set up Rhodes Scholarships, plucking people out of the United States, bringing them to Oxford University to educate them in a very special way. The whole purpose was to take down the United States and bring it back to the crown. That's what the whole purpose was. Bill Clinton, Susan Rice, lots and lots of people in the United States government, 7,000 strong, operating in the government, various layers in the government in the United States, federal, state, local, etc. 7,000 of them educated in Oxford with the express purpose of taking down the United States. And they all know who the Israelites are, and they all know who they want to destroy. That's what the COVID is all about, the changing of genetics with a shot. There's no mistake here, boys and girls. This is all part of taking down the Israelites. So don't take the shot. Don't send your kids to the devil's worshiper schools where they operate on pedophilia and every other kind of bizarre behavior is condoned, and they're teaching your kids that you have to be respectable and diversity and all this. No, it's to take down the family, take down, because the Israelites are very family oriented. So their point is to destroy the family unit in the United States. But why did they kill Christ? He was a guy that rose out of the populace, that was taking power away from the same group of people that are there today. Same group of people. And the same reasoning that he was, like Trump, like I said, I don't agree with everything Trump did. I think he could have done more to drain the swamp. But it was like draining the infinite swamp. Everybody in Washington is a crook with, their hand in the cookie jar. I once said, and I'll say it again, you take Washington, D.C., put a perimeter around it and call it a prison. I mean, everybody there is a criminal. They're on the take. They're structuring the United States government so they can make money and their buddies can make money. That's all it is. Nothing more, nothing less. And they are all owing to the great money god, the central bank of Europe. Yeah. That's it, and I'll say it again. The CIA is the police force of the World Bank. Okay, here's a question about a long time ago. When was that? I'm trying to think. It might have been about 10 years ago. It was 2010. That's right. It was 2010. There was flooding in the Midwest, tremendous flooding, Minnesota, Iowa, Wisconsin, and part of Indiana, tremendous flooding. It went on all springtime. But anyway, how did I come across this? It was a pallet of dent corn. Dent corn is when the corn dries. There's a little dent that occurs in the end of the kernel of corn. And a group of university professors had started out planting a field, and they had this original non-hybrid dent corn that was used throughout the, it was not sweet corn, it was like field corn. Field corn is just corn, or sweet corn is just corn with a higher sugar content, and that turns into more starch when it dries out, when the end of the corn's life cycle. But anyway, they had planted everything they had that spring. I think it was the spring of 2010. And then there was a tremendous flood, and it wiped out all of these states. And that was the time that they were going to raise enough of this corn to where they could distribute they were growing it as seed corn, to distribute to farmers all over the Midwest to start a program to get back to high-quality, non-GMO organic corn. And this flood came along and ruined it all. So anyway, I think this is what happened. I was looking for corn to store up as an emergency food. And I called up this, I don't know how I got a hold of him, but it was a feed store down in Iowa. Anyway, the guy was saying, well, I got this pallet over here. It's this dense seed corn that these guys, there was one pallet left that they didn't use, they didn't come and get. He said, but that's all I got, and it's organic, you can eat it. And I said, well, wait a minute, what do you mean? So he told me this whole story about the university professors and many years of propagating this to the point where they had and two or three states, massive amounts of this growing for seed corn, and the entire crop failed because of the floods. And you just almost have to wonder, was there some nefarious Monsanto plan behind this? You always have to look at that. But anyway, he had one pallet left of this, and I said, well, what are you going to do with it? He said, I guess we're going to just grind it into feed for the animals. And I'm going, oh, wait a minute. What does it take for me to get this pallet of corn up to where I am? At the time, I was nearby, let's just put it that way. And so I made arrangements, and I bought the pallet of corn, and I said, now what do I do with this? And I said, well, I got a radio show. I'm going to advertise and put it on my webpage and sell it in little baggies. The minimum was 250 seeds, and then I think there was 5,000 seeds, something like that, 250, 2,500, and 5,000 seeds, something like that. And so anyway, I took these pallets. There was probably how many 50-pound or 100-pound bags of corn bags, these big paper bags, on the pallet. I don't know, there were 100 bags of that or 50. I don't even remember. But I put them in baggies, and then people bought this on the internet and planted it. And then the next year and for years after that, people would send me pictures of the corn they were growing. And these were huge. I mean, these were mega, mega corn ears. The people were holding them up. And I said, I've never seen corn like that. I grew up in corn country, but I've never seen corn that was that big. It was just a huge, amazing. And then these people would keep their seeds, etc., and grow the next year. I had a listener write in this last week and asked me, hey, whatever happened to that corn? Do you have any left? And of course, I don't have any left. And the question was, is anybody out there that bought some of that corn that has been propagating it for all these years and could send me some? And there's probably some listeners anyway, you know, that I would love to, I'd love to hear of your progress with this. But this stuff went all over. I think it went to foreign countries, but I remember there were countries that wouldn't let it in. For example, Australia turned it away. They said, you cannot ship non-GMO corn into this country, into Australia. And there were other countries like that also. So I got kind of a little education along with, you know, just sending this out to, you know, literally thousands of people bought this. And the reason 250 seeds was the minimum is because you need at least that many seeds to maintain the integrity of the genetic cross-pollination, because the every ear of corn is a little bit different, and the cross-pollination is what makes it hardy. And so the I don't know all of the details here, but you need minimum of 250 seeds, and that's typical of a lot of plants, and it's true of people. Remember the Hitler race, the Aryan race, where they were going to close up all of the blonde-haired, blue-eyed people who are Celts, by the way, Israelites, and make them into a super race, and only cross-pollinate them within their own group. Well, of course, that doesn't work. You need a much bigger population base. And that's why, for example, NASA's program of going into space is a farce if you understand that, you know, with 10 people on Mars, it's not going to work. You need a minimum of two, as far as human populations, to have a good cross-section of genetics. You need probably 250,000 people. If you start getting below that, and this is on a worldwide population, whether you're on spaceship Earth or spaceship out in the middle of nowhere, out in outer space, you need at least that many people to maintain genetic stability and force, or a strong genetic population, so that it, because otherwise you get inbreeding. And that's the problem with the blue bloods. Like in England, they kept breeding amongst the families, thinking that they didn't want any of that riffraff getting involved in their families, and they kept degrading to the point, well, where they are today. I hate to say it that way, but you need cross-pollination in the genetics to prosper. You cannot keep cross-mixing within close family lines, let's just put it that way. So back to my story about the corn. If anybody out there has been growing this corn that you got from me and have had it isolated to the point where we know this is the same variety of corn that I sent you, the Dent corn, then please get a hold of me at my website. The email is on my website. Just go to the contact button. The email is there. It's jmcc@jmccanniescience.com is what it is. But go there, make sure you get it spelled correctly, and send in an email and say, hey, I got some of that corn you were asking about. We've been raising it. We've kept it pure, and we've kept it isolated, and therefore, here I am. Let me know, please. Just a quick mention on the housing market. There's one thing that I don't think many people have talked about, but in the COVID world, it has caused a lot of mass migration. And this type of thing has happened to populations in the past where they say there's a disease or say a volcanic eruption, or it could be a natural disaster. It could be an illness. It could be all kinds of things. It could be Venus passing by with Moses taking the Israelites out of Egypt. It could be a lot of things going on. The COVID thing caused one effect here, and that is there's a lot of movement in real estate. So people are buying properties, they're selling their homes and moving. People are getting out of the big cities, they're moving out to the country, buying land. And it's just one of the natural results of COVID, which is, in a sense, a good thing. I don't know how long this will last, but right now in the spring of the year, there's a lot of movement anyway. People are getting ready for summer. The springtime is a good time to move because you have all summer to get ready, and then you have, to get ready for next winter. So anyway, that's an interesting observation. Somebody was talking to me this past week, and they said, you can tell a person by their enemies. And I don't know if the person said that Winston Churchill said this, or someone said this, famous quotation. So anyway, I thought that was very interesting, and he was referring to himself, who had a history somewhat like mine, where you have enemies because you're an honest person. You're a person doing research, trying to do an honest job, and there are people out there who are dishonest, trying to scam on some, who knows, whatever it is. In the case of my work, people trying to scam and corrupt data from space probes to prove, to try and uphold their ridiculous theories that don't work, like astronomers at Cornell, great example, Carl Sagan. Who made up data, swept data under the rug, lied, cheated, refused to accept new information, refused to talk to people like myself who had alternative ideas on what this all meant, etc. But in the process, you end up making enemies. And this is universal. I don't care if you're Junie Mikovic. I don't care if you're Donald Trump. I don't care who you are. If you're out there blazing ahead trying to make something good for some people, you're going to step on the toes of some other people, and they will be enemies. So that was an interesting slogan or saying. You can tell a person by their enemies. Which leads me into the next topic here. The founder of Wikipedia is leaving Wikipedia to start a very similar page, because of the just crazy things that have happened within Wikipedia. Wikipedia has been completely taken over by the CIA, and they have teams of people that went in there and totally corrupted the information available in Wikipedia. So anyway, there's a new platform. There's all kinds of new platforms coming out, platforms that compete with YouTube, platforms that compete with Facebook or Twitter or other types of social media, which have been taken over by the CIA and the very left-leaning media, etc. And so don't, if you're a student, don't go to Wikipedia for information. it's just a pit of lies and deceit and erroneous information, promotion of things that should not be promoted, name calling, just absolutely. It's become a very sick, distorted place. So don't go to Wikipedia. It is pretty worthless. And YouTube, the only value that YouTube has is that if you want to fix your bicycle or know how to plant an orange tree or possibly, I don't know, whatever you want to know, you know, technical things, how to cut down a big tree, you know, maybe YouTube is going to have some value for you there. But when it comes to science, when it comes to real information about how the world works or history, etc., the only thing you're going to get on YouTube is a bunch of garbage. And so people are leaving YouTube in droves also, although it's a long-term, highly profitable platform for some people. Here's an interesting story just sent in by a listener. The COVID vaccine by Pfizer is having so much damage effect that Pfizer is going to governments around the world and trying to bully them into putting up passing legislation by which the country would then be liable for the damages caused by the Pfizer vaccine. This is, we're talking about the COVID vaccine, because of the massive amount of damage this is doing to people. A lot of people dying, people having serious injuries, Alzheimer's. You name it. These shots are having devastating effect on the public. And, I mean, can you imagine just having something like this being distributed on a massive scale, like a never before seen massive scale for vaccinations? And it has had absolutely no testing at all. Absolutely insane. I mean, just that this even came about. But the fact that they are trying to bully governments, and also the thing is Brazil, Argentina, and other countries have told them to go take a hike. They don't have a problem in the United States because, what was it, 1996, the government passed a law that said there's no repercussions, you cannot sue a pharmaceutical company for vaccine damage, because the idea was that they need protection and protection from lawsuits so that they can do all of this benefit for you, the public. Well, after that, they didn't have any testing. They didn't do anything. They just developed vaccines and marketed them. And with no recourse or no retribution on the part of the vaccine makers, because they got Congress to pass a bill saying that there was no responsibility for this. Good grief. And so anyway, they were trying to get Brazil and Argentina and other countries to sign over their military installations to Pfizer, if you can even imagine this, to their military installations, so that Pfizer would have them as a hedge, a financial hedge against lawsuits, and then the lawsuits in these countries, Brazil, Argentina, wherever, would be, the losses would be covered by these countries selling off these assets. Well, who would they sell them to? And would they get real money for these assets? They'd probably get pennies on the dollar or whatever currency they're using. Anyway, just absolutely amazing. This was certainly bound to happen, where people would wake up, realize that the vaccine was damaging people. And by this time, it would be too late. Hundreds of millions of people around the world getting a vaccination that's never been tested. Oh, my goodness. Anyway, and then with genetic changes, which you can't even detect, in years to come, I'm sure you're going to see babies being born with birth defects, genetic birth defects. But by then, it's going to be too late. What do you do then? Just like throughout history, there have been many incidents where the medical industry or the pharmaceutical industries have put something out, or the militaries have used chemicals, etc., which have destroyed entire generations of people and children, etc. Right now, England is under a complete lockdown. You cannot even go for a vacation. If you're caught going on vacation, you can be arrested and fined in England. Now, this is another perfect example. I talked about this last week. Perfect example of an Israelite nation that's been taken over by Jesuit bankers. That's who runs the monarchy and the houses of England, the government bodies. That's who runs it. So you have MI6 from England, the CIA from the U.S., you've got the Mossad from Israel, you got the Queen of England, who's a German Rothschild. I mean, things couldn't be any more topsy-turvy than they are right now. I can't believe it. Yeah, so anyway, England, if you get caught leaving your house, nobody can be outside. If you get caught leaving your house and are not authorized, you can be arrested and fined. Yeah, absolutely nuts. But then once again, this is a case of a Israelite nation being taken over from outside by crazy people. I just want to make a couple quick announcements here about some product issues. So if you don't want to hear about that, go get a drink of water. I've got some other topics to cover on the scientific sense on Mars, some interesting things going on there. But I want to emphasize the wing generators are available from 2 to 250 kilowatts. Primarily, for the average person out there, you're not going to use something over the 25 kilowatts. I have the multi-blade systems, which are available on a much shorter time scale. The wing generators are running anywhere from 3 to 4 to 5 months to get everything assembled for those. The price of steel, it's a somewhat of a moving target. The price of steel and copper have gone up. The price of the rare earth metals that are necessary for some of the magnetic parts have gone way up and become more difficult to obtain. And so I'm able to do these. It's just a matter of being a bit more time. But the multi-blade systems, these are the home variety of wind energy systems, are a much shorter time frame. And a lot of that is in shipping and handling, getting the systems together and putting them all together, because every system is a custom system. The one that you would order is not going to be the same as some guy in a different state with different wind conditions, different battery requirements, different power loads that they're going to be running, all of that very different for every customer. So that's why these are custom orders. But at any rate, the lead time on the multi-blade systems can be as little as 3 weeks to a month. And like I say, a lot of that is in shipping and handling. The littler systems, like the 2-kilowatt multi-blade system, if you buy your own pole and batteries locally, then the shipping can be less than a week till it arrives at your doorstep. So at any rate, it's a complicated business. But just go to my webpage. And the way to start out to get alternative energy is to fill out a questionnaire. That's the first step. And then it's fairly simple. Just fill out the questionnaire. We talk about your energy needs, what your past energy usage has been, where the location is for the system, and then just some of the ground rules, etc. And the grow towers are there also. Very important to be able to grow your own greens, vegetables. And then the education package, the terracotta kitchen filters, the gravity feed filters, those are available. They're taking a little bit longer to fill some of those orders just because it's not in production. The terracotta systems are made in the USA. We don't have the production capacity as we had with the stainless steel units, so things take just a little bit longer, but they're there, which is pretty amazing. The I'm just going to move on. Go to my webpage. I'll give it at the end of the show. But there's a very interesting volcanic situation on Mars, and this has been observed for years and years, and what it is above a volcano. There is a number of very high volcanoes on planet Mars. And you have to understand that the planet Mars has a very, very thin atmosphere. And that's one of the reasons why it's going to be very difficult for people to go to Mars, because there's no radiation protection from the atmosphere like the Earth's atmosphere affords to us. A lot of the very harsh radiation is trapped at the upper atmosphere of Earth, and it does not get down to where we are, at least minimal dosages. But on Mars, that's not the case. And so what happens is that when you have a volcano on Mars that's potentially somewhat active also, then what can happen is there's a discharge literally with outer space, because there's not a big atmosphere there. There's not a big atmosphere between the top of the volcanoes and outer space. And so what happens is on the night side of Mars, because Mars is acting as a comet, these tall volcanoes can connect into the electrical discharges. And what's coming in? Water, water, and water. That's the primary constituent. We have hydrogen and oxygen in our neighborhood in the solar system, so therefore the primary resulting element or chemical compound that is formed from hydrogen and oxygen is water. And so what happens is these streamers can form very quickly and move at like hundreds of kilometers per hour. And then when the planet turns around and sees the sunlight, these clouds that are very high in the Martian atmosphere dissipate. And so this is a phenomenon which is, of course, NASA doesn't understand it. They have no clue of what's going on here. And it's very explainable when you understand that these tall peaks on Mars are connecting into the vertical electric field, which extends, and Mars really doesn't have the ionosphere like Earth has. So I guess we probably won't have shortwave radio on Mars if people finally get there. And then one last other scientific issue here is that during the passage of the New Horizons spacecraft past the planet Pluto, and yes, it is a planet, they discovered X-rays. It was at that same time. And so the question is, what is causing X-rays at Pluto? Well, nearly ice-laden a planet, very cold, frigid. You have hydrogen compounds like ammonia freezing, creating snowflakes in the upper atmosphere of Pluto. But where do the X-rays come from? There's no real source. And X-rays are a result of the discharge of the solar capacitor. So all the planets are doing it. The comets are doing it more than the planets because they're in elliptical orbits. The discharge is more intense. But what I find extremely comical out of all of this is that NASA comes along and it goes, oh, yeah, you know, like flip the glasses up. Oh, yeah, that's just, sure, that's real normal. They like, like they almost expected it to happen or something. No, according to standard astronomical theory, there's no reason for there to be X-rays at Pluto. And I hear some of these explanations just absurd. Like, oh, it's the sun that's doing it. Something like that. Just absolutely ludicrous that somehow X-rays that are created on the sun get transported out to Pluto and concentrate there for some magical reason. No, it's the fact that Pluto is discharging the solar capacitor, and the sunward side, the electrons, it's called Bremsstrahlung X-ray formation. And what happens as the electrons come in from the sunward side, they break, they slow down, and generate X-rays. And that's what was happening with comets, etc. And unfortunately, the NASA hierarchy will not give up the ghost and admit that they were totally wrong about X-rays with comets, X-rays with other planets. And Earth has many regions in which there are X-rays. you can find X-rays in outer space between the Van Allen belts. That's one of the locations where you would have electrical discharges sufficiently strong to create X-rays. And then the Earth's upper atmosphere, the same situation where you have the late electrons coming in from the sunward side in the discharge of the solar capacitor, because the sun is left with a net negative space charge, and out beyond the orbit of Pluto is the positive end of the capacitor. So anything in that capacitor will be discharging the solar capacitor. And that's exactly what's going on with Pluto. Little Pluto out there at the icy edges of the solar system, according to standard theory, should not have X-rays at all. There's absolutely no reason for it. And in fact, comets, which are active in X-ray radiation because of the discharge of the solar capacitor, even those have trouble generating X-rays when they're that far from the sun. So Pluto, once again, is discharging the solar capacitor, creating X-rays on the sunward side. Very typical and very explainable using my plasma discharge comet model. Okay, in the last few minutes, I want to talk a little bit about batteries. And here's an issue that I had to many years ago when I started working with the wing generator, etc. The core part of any alternative energy system would be batteries. And if you want to be off-grid, then literally you do have to have storage. Just like if you want to be water independent, you need some kind of big container. It might be a lake, it might be a tank, it might be a pond, it might be a well, which is in a sense a reservoir. But you need a significant container to buffer the water, to keep the water, and so that you can draw off at the amount of water you need, and then it's constantly filling up at a certain given rate. And that's the same with alternative energy. You need a buffer, you need a storage bank to hold the electricity. But batteries can be expensive. So I had to go out and solve this issue, because say you go to your local batteries, you know, your battery store, pick one, and go there and ask them to provide you with 96 200 amp hour sealed gel glass mat batteries. 96 of them. And they're going to look at you, or 50 of them, or 40 of them, or even 18, which would be a base system. And they're going to look at you like you're the man from Mars. Go to somebody like Powerwall, or go to any of the other vendors that are selling lithium batteries for home systems. Typically, they would attach a set of solar panels to these. And you might pay around $13,000, $14,000 for a system that has maybe 3 or 4 kilowatt hours of usable storage. And when I say usable, that's a very important word, because they will advertise more, but the amount of usable energy is maybe half of that, of what they advertise. So anyway, what is a lithium-ion battery going to cost you? Just one. It's going to run you around $6,000 to $7,000 going rate right now. Well, to provide enough energy for you to run your house for just one day, it's going to cost you about $60,000 to $70,000 in lithium-ion batteries, or the various other lithium formulas for batteries. But it's going to cost you a pretty penny. Now, what I did is I went out and I researched batteries, and I use the glass mat gel batteries, and they also have direct contacts directly with the factory. So when I go out and get batteries, I don't buy 2 or 4 or 6 or something like that. I buy pallets of them, and so there might be 30 some batteries on a pallet. And so I'm buying pallets and pallets of the batteries, and then that savings goes to you, because these are the top of the line batteries. You can get other types of batteries But for example, the liquid acid batteries have a lot of problems. You get the they emit a vapor that's very poisonous and toxic, not only toxic, but very explosive. And if you have that in a closed area, it could be poisonous for you to breathe. And if there were a spark there, which is common around electrical equipment, you could have an explosion. And so anyway, the regular acid, liquid acid batteries, even if they're deep cycle, are not a very good choice. They freeze up in the wintertime. They lose their effectiveness. And so the batteries that I use don't have any of these problems. They don't have vapor problem. They're sealed. You can drop them. You could punch a hole in the side of it, and they're not dangerous. There's no acid that would come flowing out. And they have a very good response, very high number of recharge rate, etc. And so batteries are very important. So the wing generator and the big energy systems that I sell, there again, if you went to your average solar panel dealer or whatever they're selling to try and put on your house or whatever, ask them for circuits and wiring, etc., for a 50-kilowatt system. And they're going to look at you, and they're going to go, oh, well, you mean 5,000 watts. No, 50 kilowatts. And they're going to look at you like you're the man from Mars, but that's the kind of equipment I sell. It's commercial grade and a very large battery backup so that you can run for a long period of time off batteries if the wind is not blowing. And then also the Generac generators or the other four different brand names of generators that I sell, including smaller portable ones. So batteries are the heart of your system, but you need good batteries, you need good pricing on those batteries, etc. And that's what I can get you where, believe me, I've been through this market a lot, and nobody else can supply the kind of things that I can supply to you. So go to the webpage, jmccsci.com, and understand that I'm offering a product, the wing generator, and now the multi-blade wind energy systems, which are about 50% of the price. So if you have a light-duty home application that doesn't require a wing generator, the wing generators are more efficient. They're better at low wind, at high wind. But if you have regular steady wind, fairly good wind, then one of the multi-blade systems might work just fine for you. And they're available on a much shorter time frame. So at any rate, once again, go to the webpage, jmccsci.com. Go to the subpage on the wing generator, fill out the questionnaire, send it to the email address that's there, and then we'll get back to you to start speccing out a system. This is James McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.